Hello, Portland Trailblazer fans, and welcome to this edition of the Blazers Edge podcast. I'm Dave Deckard from BlazersEdge.com, along with my buddy Dan Morang, and we hope you're catching us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on anywhere else you found us. We are glad that you did. We are happy to be part of the podcast lineup, and we have an exciting week of Trailblazers action to talk about. Dan, since we last talked, the Blazers lost two games, one to the Golden State, one to Phoenix. They beat Dallas. They beat Memphis. So they're on a winning streak as we speak. You watched all four games. What stuck out most to you out of the week?
As we take a look at this, and it's a nice thing that Blazers come out of the road trip 2-1. That's a positive thing to take out of this. The big underlying theme has got to be Damian Lillard. I mean, we had it in the first couple games, and even in the Memphis game where his production dropped and he got a little nicked up, he's still doing things that we've never seen him do. And it's been unbelievable. His patience, the way he's dictating the game, it's so evident that when he leaves the floor, the Blazers falter without it. They're leaning on it. They're feeding off it so much that when he's not there to guide them, they fall apart.
You know, Lillard, okay. One game this season, he has not been the team's leading scorer. One game this season, he has failed to score 27 points. That's the Memphis game you mentioned when he got injured. Other than that, he has not come in below 27 points. This is something the likes of which we haven't seen in maybe forever.
Yeah, in Portland, this is a thing that it's his level of scoring, and not just scoring, but efficient scoring, is off the charts. He's not chucking up 30 shots a night. This is not Russell Westbrook, who took 44 shots to get 51 points. I mean, he is just scoring at will wherever he wants. He's pulling up at the logo set shot and pulling from 35 and burying it.
You know, just as impressive to me is that he's getting in the mid-range and people are anticipating the layup, so they're overrunning him. He just pulls up with that little manhole jumper and cans it. I mean, and it's as automatic right now as anything LaMarcus Aldridge did when he was here. And LaMarcus had it stuck on automatic.
Yeah, and that's actually been a nice evolution to his game. I think the two things that you could talk about are Lillard's efficiency and his shot selection. And I think those go hand in hand. He's getting to the rim a ton and finishing at almost 70%, which is an absurd rate for a guard. But the mid-range game is always an area where he wasn't bad, but he wasn't great either. But he's not going to it often, but he's using it to set up everything else. He buries a three, he gets to the rim three times. Now all of a sudden you're running him off the line, you're walling off the paint. Let me pull up for that free throw line jumper and bury it. And you're sitting there with your defense and your hands in the air like, what do we do to stop this guy?
And there's absolutely nothing you can do at that point, which is what makes him, of course, so valuable and so dangerous. It is literally scary to watch him. And as you referenced, at this point, he is carrying this team. The Dallas game in particular was black and white exhibit of it. Every time he took the floor, the Mavericks just were tied up in knots. Every time he went down, sat on the bench, the Mavericks surged back. The Blazers couldn't do anything without him.
Yeah, it was a game that they really should have had in hand. And that was clearly evident. Every time Lillard got on the floor, he'd take over, and you're just sitting there going, good God, how are the Mavericks getting into this game? And then you watch everything kind of play out. Every time Lillard went down, here comes the Mavericks again. And you're wondering when somebody else is going to step up. When is somebody going to come in there and fill that void?
Yeah, let's get to the bench in a second. But before we do that, let me ask you this. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, what is happening with Lillard right now? And I don't mean the scoring. That's obviously phenomenal. I'm talking about the team right now with him is incredible. Without him, with certain exceptions, has a hard time getting anything going. Are you happy that the Blazers have that kind of transcendent talent on the floor? Or are you worried that they don't have more talent around him?
You know, this is going to sound kind of counterintuitive. I'm actually thrilled that he's reached this level. Because when we talked before, when we talk about how Lillard can get better, it was always these micro moves. It was improve efficiency a little bit, score a little bit better, take a little bit better care of the ball. Nothing that we saw that was going to be transcendent. And that's exactly what he's become. He has become a transcendent level scorer. And it's almost absurd what he's been able to do. And at point, you think and you anticipate that somebody else is going to kind of step up and they don't have to rely and lean on him so heavily. And I don't think it's a case of that the team isn't good enough to keep pace with him. I just think they don't know how yet.
You know, it's interesting. Someone else stepping up. I mean, that someone is obviously CJ McCollum is a prime candidate. And, you know, I'm looking at McCollum's numbers right here. And his field goal percentage from the field and from the three-point arc is higher, significantly higher than it was last year. Obviously, small sample size, but in seven games, he's shooting 46% from the field against about 45% last year, 46% from the arc against 42% last year, and he's actually scoring more per minute than he was last year. Does it feel like that to you, though?
I think some of that's skewed, obviously, by the 37-point night that he just had against Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something we talked about before in that I don't know if CJ knows exactly where to take over and where not to. I think he's trying to defer a little too much to Evan Turner and Alan Crabb with the second unit. But against Memphis, you saw him go into full blown. This is me mode. let me go ahead and take over and run the show. And he did it with Damian on the floor and he did it with Damian off the floor. And I think you'll see more of that as he starts to kind of find his groove and find his place and where he needs to be in the system. And less about worrying about integrating those guys and more about being his guy.
I think it's fair to say Damian Lillard is the first unit right now. CJ McCollum is the second unit. And everybody else is some kind of third unit that happens to be on the floor. There's no, like, starting five and bench five for the Blazers. There's Lillard, there's McCollum, and there's everybody else. Talk to me about this bench. You've been watching him closely. What have you noticed?
I mean, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are scoring over 50 points a game. If you're getting that from two guys, you've got a reasonable level to assume that you're going to be in every game, right? I mean, you've got two guys that are at that level where more than 50% of your offense, or a little bit more, less than 50% of your offense is coming from two guys. And Lillard's usage percentage isn't that crazy to where those other guys can't get involved. But, I mean, we're getting bench production of 11 points, 14 points, 12 points. And you sit there and you're kind of wondering, how is this possible? In that way that bench is played out, Alan Crabb started out pretty well. He had a couple double-digit point games, 10 points, 12 points, 14 points, and looked pretty well. But then he's kind of fallen the wayside where he's not taking shots. He's not getting in the offense. He's shooting 31% from three. He's just not looking like himself. And I think part of that's trying to integrate. And part of that may be the pressure of the new contract. There's just a lot of things going on there. And then you add in the bench bigs that aren't really contributing. They're not rebounding. They're not crashing the offensive boards. They're not getting the second chance buckets. They're letting teams run on the fast break. And it's all kind of falling apart.
Yeah, I mean, does this surprise you? I mean, did you see this coming, or is that lack of production shocking?
Shocking's probably the lowest level I would go on it. I mean, yeah, some of these guys had career years. Mo Harkless came on, was kind of a revelation, now inserted in the starting lineup. Aminu is a starter, so you kind of, and he's worked his way into it. So you assume a guy like Alan Crabb, who, you know, I think by the end of last season, I think he was averaging almost 13 a game, shot almost 40%, shot 39% from the three-point line. You expect a level of production from these guys that was going to be consistent, especially when you figure they're getting more used to who they are, where they are, and where they fit in the system. A guy like Alan Crabb has spent, you know, 5 years here or going into his fifth year here. You would assume at some point that, you know, that would kind of come to fruition. That the consistency and the familiarity was supposed to be a strong point of this team. I mean, you added one guy. It's not like this is a huge turnover. You added one guy in Evan Turner, and all of a sudden, that changes the entire dynamic. All of a sudden, you can't rebound. Like, all of a sudden, you can't play basic defense. I mean, I know this team wasn't a strong defensive team to begin with, but you added a guy who's supposed to be a plus defender, and the defense is struggling even further, and you can't score on top of it? How does that work?
Yeah, so look, Lillard and McCollum are playing roughly 28-29% of the team's total minutes. they are providing 49%, almost 50% of the team's total points right now. That's a massive imbalance. I mean, it's a good thing in terms of they can score that much. And granted, they're taking about 43% of the total field goal attempts. So, I mean, you got to factor that in. But Blazers have got to get something somewhere besides those two, because God help them if one of those two goes down. Or even, you know, in this case, has a non-20-point night. I mean, Lillard's off night was 19. What happens if he scores 15 sometimes? What happens if he scores 12? What happens if the plantar fasciitis comes back or this finger becomes a chronic problem that he's suffering with now? What in the world is going to happen when even more shots are available to guys that they don't exactly run from them, but they sure aren't reliable in hitting them?
Well, the thing is, you hit on it with 43% of the shots are coming from these guys, but Lillard's shooting 50% from the floor. He's like percentage points away from 50, 40, 90. McCollum's shooting 46 from the field and 46 from three. So these guys are getting a bulk of the shots, but they're canning them. So if that's the case, I mean, the secondary guys, they're even though those two guys are getting so many shots up, they're making them. If these other guys can at least step up and fill a little bit of that void, that's, I mean, troubling to say the least.
Well, I suppose because, I mean, you got to ask at some point, okay, we all want to hope that Damian Lillard continues this, but what happens when that field goal percentage normalizes? What happens when, you know, McCollum is not hitting by far a career high percentage from the 3-point arc? I mean, Lillard is a 43% shooter for his career. The chance that he will continue to shoot 50% for an entire season is not high. So, yeah, I mean, so who is it? Who is it for you? Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, they're going to be fine. They're going to need some help at some point. Your candidate to bring them that help is?
I've got a candidate 1A and a 1B. It's Allen Crabbe, who's shown that he can do it. I mean, he's a knockdown shooter, flat out. That's what he does. He worked in the offseason to add a little bit of a dribble drive game, and he's shown it. He's gotten to his spots. He's just not hitting shots. But the guy that seems to be bringing it every night, even if he's not hitting shots, he's still finding ways to get into it, surprisingly, is Maurice Harkless. And I don't know if he has the makeup necessary to be that third guy. But when you've got two ball-dominant guards in McCollum and Lillard who do more with a ball in their hand than they do creating for others, and that's not to say they aren't creators, they're just better at getting their own shots. But a guy like Harkless who can cut back door, and we saw Lillard just throw a couple absolute dimes to Harkless, cutting back door for dunks and layups and attacking mismatches in the post. He's the kind of guy that would thrive playing off of those two, and he's kind of shown over these last few games.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's talk about Crabbe for a second. Ed Davis takes no shots, basically, okay? And Shabazz Napier barely plays. Other than those two, Crabbe is the lowest number of field goals per minute on the team. And Mason Plumlee is next. Evan Turner, okay, he's not huge, but Evan Turner is comfortably in with Al-Farouq Aminu, you know, Maurice Harkless, Myers Leonard. They're around 10, 11. Allen Crabbe is just below 9. So for the guy who's got the green light and the potential, it's not that he's not playing, it's not that he's not hitting. He's not taking the shots.
Yeah. The crazy thing is you look at some of Allen Crabbe's lines over the last couple nights, and you're thinking, this is the guy that they re-signed, that they invested in, because he showed he could knock down shots, he could be that perimeter threat, he could be that guy. You look at his stat lines, his minute per game, and, I mean, against Memphis, 27 minutes, 4 shots, 33 minutes, 9 shots, 37 minutes, 9 shots, 20 minutes, two shots, and it's just
they can't have it because it's 33 minutes with 6 points of production.
Yeah, and you're not only, I mean, it's one thing if he's getting 7, 8, 9 shots, but he's hitting 4 or 5 of them. But is he not only is he not getting shots, when he is getting shots, he's not hitting them. And that's the worst possible scenario. When you're talking about a bench that's struggling to score, and you've got a guy out there that's capable of getting buckets and getting looks, and he's not only is he not taking them, he's not hitting them. I mean, what are you supposed to do with that? It's not like you can insert somebody else into that role, because the Blazers just don't have anybody. You look at the depth of this team, how many guys are wing-oriented shooters outside of Lillard and McCollum?
Yeah. Well, which brings up an interesting point. Wing-oriented shooters are not wings. Evan Turner. I mean, he's coming in. He's taking a few more shots than Crabbe is. He is producing better over the last few games, but he's not shooting anywhere near Crabbe's percentage from the field. From the arc, he's shooting 43%, but he barely takes them. So, look, are Evan Turner and Allen Crabbe kind of getting in each other's way?
I honestly think that's the case, and I think it's even affected McCollum to a point. I think those three aren't sure how to play off of each other. Crabbe's a guy that doesn't need the ball to work. Evan Turner and CJ McCollum are both guys that need the ball to be their most effective. And I don't know that they've delineated well enough to know who needs to have the ball when. And I mean, in the pecking order, if you're sitting here watching them, it's McCollum. McCollum's got to be that guy. But the problem is, Evan Turner's not a shooter, so teams are just, they're leaving him. They're leaving him wide open. The reason his three-point percentage is so high is teams are giving him 10, 12, 15 feet of airspace. And even then, he's hesitating on him. So it's one of those things where the floor balance, there was a lineup they put out there the other day, I believe that was Turner, Aminu, Plumlee, or Davis. I can't remember. There was 4 non-shooters out there with the bench lineup, and I believe 1 starter. And as you would figure, the Blazers couldn't score a point to save their lives. And it was just really painful basketball to watch.
And I think the problem is not necessarily that the Blazers have a guy or two like this. It's that the opponent can now blanket game plan for this, that basically you know that almost anybody on Portland's lineup outside of the top two, you just give that space to until they prove that they can hit 3 shots in a row. And there's a difference between that kind of happening sometimes and that being on the coach's chalkboard at the start of the game. Not that I think coaches are completely ceding points to the Blazers, but seriously, if you've got Damian Lillard on the opposing side, and you know Al-Farouq Aminu is the alternative and he's hanging out there around the three-point line, who do you want to shoot?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the way the floor balance goes, you can visually see it from opposing defenses. There were times when there was only Lillard or only McCollum on the floor running the offense, and there's 4, sometimes 5 guys staring at one of those 2 guys, and they just don't care what's going on around them. I mean, they'll slowly shuffle their feet to a backside corner 3 if it's Allen Crabbe. They'll semi-honor that. But the amazing thing is that Lillard and McCollum are still finding ways to score against that defense. And it's not like these guys, I mean, you look at Lillard's assist totals, they're a little bit lower, which you would expect with a guy who's scoring that much. But it's not like he's not getting the ball to guys in scoring positions. They're just not hitting shots.
Exactly. Now, speaking of defense, Portland's defense. I mean, they finally they registered not a bad effort against Memphis the other night. I mean, that was I thought that was clearly one of their better defensive games.
And it still wasn't great.
Thus far.
That's the thing, is that their better defense was still meh. I mean, watch the way they played and how they executed throughout that game. They let Memphis, you could write a storyline for a Blazers game so far this season. It goes the same way. Come out hot, bench unit comes in, maintains the status quo for 2-3 minutes, falls off a cliff, starters reinserted, claw back to even or a few points down at halftime, come out in third quarter, play awful, claw back out, and hope to God you have a great fourth quarter again. I mean, that's literally been the storyline almost every single game if you throw out the Steph Curry explosion against Golden State.
Yeah. Now, the Blazers scored 29 against Memphis, and they did hold Memphis to 17 in the fourth period. So there was a little bit of inversion there. And, you know, they did. They held them to 38%, 23% shooting from the arc. Now, the Blazers have been pretty good from the arc, so that are defending, so that's not a surprise. But I mean, at this point, holding the other team under 110 is an accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their O rating and D rating between the different lineups, and you can see it kind of materialize between the bench and the starters, and it doesn't matter really who's out there. Both lineups have been bad defensively. It's just that the starting lineup just has so much offensive firepower that it can compensate for the lack of defensive shortcomings, or I should say the abundance of defensive shortcomings. And yeah, the defense is different. It's more aggressive in certain areas, and we've talked about how they're extending a little bit. But they've yet to reap the benefits of it. They're forcing almost the exact same amount of turnovers as they did last year. So they're being more aggressive, but they're not getting anything out of it. They're getting less fast break points. They're getting less second chance opportunities. They're getting murdered on the boards. So and that's an area of focus defensively I think it's overlooked is rebounding, securing the ball. And that's been their, you know, something they could build on over the last few years. And then you throw that out with bad defense just all over the place. And it's not just a pick and roll. Lillard and McCollum actually haven't been terrible in that aspect, especially when you consider how often they're put in it. It's been the secondary rotations and falling asleep off ball, just things that are uncharacteristic of the Blazers. When you're already a team that struggles with points in the paint, you can't falter in all those little areas that are mostly effort areas.
Now, Portland, as of now, is seven games in, and point differential doesn't mean a lot until at least halfway through the season. But we can say this with confidence. They are not stopping other teams from scoring. I mean, the Blazers score 108 a game. They allow 109, basically. The specific number doesn't matter as much as the fact that I don't think this team can play with a near even average and come out ahead. This team needs to make inroads enough to make that offense tell every night. And they're just not doing that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, like it kind of goes back to what we're talking about in that you can't afford to give up all these little things in these different areas and expect to be able to recover and be successful on a nightly basis. Just because you have a guy like Damian Lillard who is this transcendent level player, you can't afford to get down to teams. And what's weird is this was a team that last year, third quarters weren't an issue. That was the time when it was the slow start that always held them back. So they've changed that aspect of it, but I don't know if it's second half adjustments and teams are figuring out what Portland's doing and Portland's failing to react fast enough, but that would just kind of fly in the face of a Coach Stotts team, right? I mean, he's a coach who's been renowned for great adjustments and figuring out how to attack an opponent both offensively and defensively throughout his tenure here. And to all of a sudden revert back to, or not even revert back, but go to an area that none of that kind of comes to fruition. It's really hard to decipher where exactly the Blazers need to improve on a micro level before the macro improvements start to materialize.
Well, we'll hope it's just a slow start. And, you know, that's certainly possible. And if it's not, then I think you have to take a pretty hard look at the lineup and say, okay, are there only so many ways you can shuffle these pieces? Are you just going to look? You're cooking with eight or nine ingredients, right? They're not natural matches like salmon, lemon, and thyme or something like that. You've got salmon and you've got some biscuits and you've got something else, all of which are decent individually. But if you got those eight or nine ingredients that don't quite match, no matter which order you put them in, they may end up the same mush. And if the Blazers end up there, that'll be an interesting discussion. We're not there yet, but let's bring this out. There's been buzz, I mean, more than buzz, obviously, around Philadelphia. Nerlens Noel, let's say they call up and they say, okay, you know, we are desperate to get rid of this guy. And you know, we can give them to you. We won't even ask McCollum and Lillard at this point. We might ask for Crabbe. We might ask for Myers Leonard, Noah Vonleh, you know, someone like that. Jake Layman, who had one great game in the interim there.
The rebirth of Jesus Shuttlesworth.
Yeah, that was pretty dang funny. In any case, do you hold back from that trade? Would you? I mean,
You have to take a hard look at that deal. The thing is, though, is that the area that Portland's deepest in, as far as positionally, is the bigs. What's the area of concern for Philly when they're talking about making player movement? It's to bring in wings and not bigs. So, and Evan Turner's a guy that, number one, you can't trade.
Right.
Because he's a free agent. Crabbe, you can't trade, I believe, until February 1st or 2nd, I think is when his whatever you want to call it, keeps him from being moved. So, I mean, what does that leave? Harkless? Aminu?
Technical term, whatever you want to call it. There's a restriction. So, look, this doesn't happen today. I mean, they're saying, okay, we're gonna wait you out, but we want Allen Crabbe, and we want a couple of decent, young, versatile bigs. All right. Or we might want Aminu, too, or something like that, or Harkless. Do you bite on that? Do you basically say, look, as long as you don't touch our starting guards, it's kind of carte blanche?
Yeah, but you have to be careful when you get into that a little bit, because as we've seen, Portland's ability to sign free agents to fill those gaps isn't exactly sterling.
Well, they don't, and they're not going to have money to. So, I mean, unless Philly absorbs a crap ton of salary.
Well, I mean, they're going to be able to go over the cap to re-sign Lauren Zoell, because you'll get his bird rights. If you move a guy like Crabbe, that's going to free up basically that money. So now you're looking at maybe vet men to MLE level player to fill that role.
Well, I'm sure they can get that guy, but they can't go out and get. It's not like they can say, okay, we get Nerlens Noel and we'll get a prime free agent. So in any case, what would you not trade for him? Let's put it that way.
Any single one of those guys, plus one of the low bench tier guys, Napier, Layman, whatever, that's acceptable. But I think you can't give up Crabbe and Aminu, Crabbe and Harkless. I don't think the Blazers are equipped enough to handle losing that much. And although they've struggled, we've also seen what they can do. So I think one of those guys plus filler would work as far as Portland's concerned.
I would trade Crabbe and Harkless or Crabbe and Aminu. I think because one or the other could compensate. I doubt that they'd get away without also trading a big man, because now you're talking about you have Nerlens Noel, you have Plumlee, you still have Myers Leonard, you still have Noah Vonleh, you still have Ed Davis. At some point, you got to have your fill of 6'10", 6'11" guys.
Yeah, I would assume that Vonleh would probably be a part of that, or Ed Davis, one of those two guys. Would be a part of that deal, and that's why I kind of steer away from the Crabbe plus deal.
Gotcha. So, who haven't we talked about? I mean, I just mentioned a couple of names. Mo Harkless, Ed Davis. Anybody else stick out for you besides Jake Layman, whom we bow before for his fantastic game? But before we talk about him, let's let him have another one.
Can't even get in the game right now. It was fun, and it was a saving grace, but I don't see Jake getting much burn over the next year. Let's put it that way. I personally hope nothing for the best for the guy, but
this guy's on fire though. Every time he takes the court, he's for all of his 3 minutes that he's played,
the sheepish grin was the best part
whatever
of that.
It was, yeah, no, that was so funny.
But
and by the way, Jake Layman now leads the Blazers in a bunch of like per 36 stats, so
yeah, I mean, he's third in the team in scoring.
Yeah, exactly. There's your third scorer right there. Yeah.
Jake Layman for president.
That's right.
Get your write-ins, folks. You still got a few hours.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, don't do that. We're not gonna bring that up here. This will almost be over by the time you hear this podcast. Oh, there's a saving grace. All right. So
the other guys, there's a lot to kind of work with here though. Mason Plumlee has had games where he's scored well, and he's had games where he's rebounded well, and then he's had absolutely awful games on top of that. I'm still waiting for him to have a complete game. Defensively, he's had a couple decent blocks here or there. Rebounding, he's had games where he's been non-existent, and then he's had times where he's done serviceable. If there's one thing that we knew about Plumlee coming in, was that he was a solid rebounder. There were nights when he would get beat on the boards by elite-level rebounding. And those guys, those DeAndre Jordans, the Anthony Davises, the real Rudy Goberts, those guys, they're going to get theirs no matter what. So you don't cede those numbers to them, but you hope that Plumlee's competitive in that aspect. And he hasn't been. And I don't know if that's because he's further away from the rim, taking his mid-range jumper, and that's kind of taken away from his offensive rebounding or what. But the other guy that's been disappointing, man, Ed Davis. This is a guy last year I talked about being the non-tradable player not named Lillard or McCollum. I mean, he is just workmanlike. I mean, to go full-blown cliche, he brought a lunch pail and a helmet every single day to the court. He was your tough guy. He was your rebounder. When you needed that extra offensive rebound, that guy went out and got it. And just, I don't know if it's the rotation. I don't know if it's the minutes. I don't know if it's the lack of flow within that unit or what. But he hasn't really shown up and had an Ed Davis game yet. The Memphis game, he did well enough to slow down Gasol and Randolph. But he only ended up with 4 rebounds. I mean, his box score didn't show what he gave to the game, but beyond that, it's been really, that's a lot of famine, not much feast.
Yeah, let's put perspective to that, and we'll hope this is just an early season adjustment or slump, whatever. His field goal percentage is down from 61% to 40%. His rebounding, he has lost about 33% off of, and we're talking about per minute numbers there. His personal fouls are up 50%. He's averaging 6.6 personal fouls for 36 minutes. I mean, it's a ton. You know, his offensive rebounding is way down. His scoring is exactly half per minute that it was last year. So last year he was in a groove, maybe one of the most underrated, most valuable players off the bench in the league.
He got six man of the year votes last year.
Yeah. And now it's like he doesn't, it's almost like he doesn't exist.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's kind of a contributing factor when we go back to talking about the bench, in that last year he was a solidifying force, in that you knew that as a defender, you had, although Ed's not the best rim protector, he's a solid rim protector, and he could bail you out from time here or there. Offensively, you knew that Ed was going to work extra hard. And it's not saying he's not working hard. The results just aren't there. But he's a guy that would get you that extra opportunity and kick it out for another open three. You know, the loose ball, a hard foul, something that brought a little bit of energy, a little bit of that extra stuff. And really, we haven't seen any of that, the little things that kind of made those guys like him special last year. And I think that's kind of permeated the entirety of the roster to everyone except for Lillard and McCollum.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the reality right now. The Blazers theoretically have a lot of options, a lot of quote-unquote depth. But when you turn to every option, you're going like, no, not if I can help it. That's a problem. I mean, and it's Plumlee. Well, he's not having a good game. So let's say, Myers Leonard, no. Ed Davis, no. Noah Vonleh, okay, but not for long. That's, wow. I mean, what do you do there? There's just not a lot of answers. Now, go ahead. You got something else?
No, I was just saying, I mean, you can only go so far down the line before you run out of options.
Well, I mean, even with the Blazers, I mean, you've been through 4, right? I mean, how many more options do you want? You only suit up 13.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to dip into the Jake Layman well? I mean, and I don't mean anything against Layman, but do you really want to, should you have to go through 5, 6 guys, 7 guys before you find somebody that's going to give you something?
Yeah, but that's going to be the nature of this team a little bit. I mean, when it clicks, they look good, or even when a couple people click, they look good. But this is like, if this is a good team, this team reminds me of like one of those vintage Jaguars that, okay, that's a nice looking car. that car breaks down an awful lot, and you never know when you turn the key how long it's going to be before you need to take it into the mechanic, look at another option. And, you know, the Blazers aren't injured, but it's their games break down a lot. And again, we go back to something we talked about this summer, just too many, like, one- and two-dimensional players. I don't mean that they completely lack in other areas, but they have strengths defined in about two areas, and they are pretty lacking in what they don't do well. Now, let's end up on this. Speaking of, you know, things that didn't end that well, Zach Lowe, interview with Nikola Batum, talked about, of course, many things, but his recent Blazer past. The big quote was, "I knew as soon as I was traded that it was over, that this team was going to be dismantled." That wasn't a huge stretch because it was just a matter of a couple weeks. I mean, the Blazers were denying really hard that that was happening, but you knew that was going on. He talks about the Trailblazers maybe having a chance to do something special, and it didn't get to happen. Some of that was Wesley Matthews' injury. Some of that was, you know, obviously all of that was Aldridge leaving. The team never got to its zenith. How much do you mourn that? I mean, when you look at the guys now and you look at that team from, say, 3 years ago, do you think the Blazers would have been better off had basically they stayed the course?
No. I don't. To answer that question, I don't think they would have been better off had they stayed the course. I should preface this with saying that outside of the Drexler era team and the Roy led team, LaMarcus was a guy that I absolutely adored watching, and to see him leave, more than the dismantling of the team and the other parts around him, seeing him leave was what really kind of made me take a step back and appreciate what we had there for that 3-4 year run, as they kind of came together and became this really fun, watchable, great NBA team. But the irony of it is that as I look back on it now, I realize I don't really look back on it. I don't look back on it and go, man, I wish they would have done this or done that. Yeah, the Wes injury, that one sucked. But I don't look back at it. I don't rear view mirror that team as much as I do a Brandon Roy team or the 99 through 02 team, you know, against sure. LA or something like
traveling
that.
Traveling all-star team.
Yeah. This team, it was a good team, and I miss the watching one particular player more than I do that team, which is a really weird feeling because I thought I was really, really attached to that team and to that core, but I don't know if that's necessarily a credit to how much I've come to love and watch Damian Lillard, or the realization that I didn't think that team, or that I think that team then was as good as I think it is now.
I think there might be a little bit of glossing over there. I mean, everything becomes magnified in the rearview mirror. And at the time, I thought that team was pretty good. At no time did I think that they probably had serious championship aspirations unless something changed. I think there was a needle to thread there if you could have held on to Aldridge, if C.J. McCollum also would have developed, and if Damian Lillard was there. I think that right now you could be talking about something pretty special, but the chances of all three of those happening at the same time, we can debate that till the cows come home. It just didn't. And absent that, if you were just talking about Wesley Matthews, obviously post-injury, Nikola Batum, Robin Lopez, Lillard, and Aldridge, I think that's never a bad team. I think that's probably second-round team quite often. Could see them making the conference finals even. But I don't think that that team really had a clear path to a championship. And so I think for me it's hard to mourn it over much.
Yeah, I think if you had that team plus C.J. McCollum, then you're talking a different story. But otherwise, yeah, it's one of those things where even with a healthy Wes, had he not gone down, you could make the argument that that's a Western Conference Finals team, and if everything went well, they could win that round. But I don't think that that team was going to ever beat a Max Spurs team, a Max Cavs team, or a Warriors team. So, I mean, mourning that team, it doesn't really roll off the tongue, because it was, like I said, it was a great team, but it wasn't anything that was the community and the fan base really, really embraced. And I think we look back, or we, you know, 10 years from now, we're not going to look back at that team and go, what if?
Yeah, which would be different for me than reinserting Aldridge right now, which is something we talked about, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago. I think that now that the guards have emerged and you have that base, adding that third player, I mean, I'm not sure it'd make the defense that much better and couldn't hurt, but, you know, I think that there would be a new joy de vivre, so to speak, and a new set of possibilities there. But the reality is, had Aldridge remained, that probably was going to remain his team as well. So there's give and take to it. I think ideally I would have liked to see him stay together. And by the way, I think right now in the 7-game series, that team, especially if Wes is healthy, would probably beat this team. I mean, even with McCollum and Lillard, I think
it was more well-rounded.
It was a better, it was a veteran team, you know, and that's maybe not a fair comparison, because now give this team, say, 3 more years together and that story might change. But I'm not necessarily convinced that either incarnation has a real clear way forward. And maybe that's the issue. I mean, we're debating something that, okay, it's like, would you rather have a saltine cracker or a Triscuit? Well, really, I'd rather have prime rib, but if those are my two choices, I guess I'll take the Triscuit.
Did you just call Damian Lillard a Triscuit?
No, it has nothing to do with Lillard. It's the team altogether. Damian Lillard is the fine whipped cream cheese, and CJ McCollum is the pimento on top. And with that analogy, we will leave it there. This is Dave Deckard for Dan Morang. We will catch you next week. We will have 4 more games to talk about, and hopefully nicer than a 2-2 record. Definitely possibility of 3-1. We will see you next week, and we'll talk all about it.